data practices issue is in Section 1. This has to do with the data sharing allowance between agencies that administer child welfare programs to have access to child support data. The second is a matter on Section 2, which is on page 6 of the bill, and that strikes language that has to do with child maltreatment review panels, and that is because in other sections of this bill we are proposing to eliminate the child protection review panel. So it just strikes out language on that. And then the third matter, this is in the data practices, has to do with Section 3, adoptive parent, and it actually provides that data may be released to adoptive parents according to provisions that are found in 260C, and that is actually on page, referenced in page 40 of the bill. On page 40, lines 13 through 16, what it allows is that when the agency is working with a family to adopt a child, the agency is able to provide to share private data about that child and the child's needs when they adopt a parent, so that we can assess, is the parent willing and able to meet the special needs of that child?
These are the only three sections?
Those are the only three sections that have to do with data practices.
Discussion members, I know Representative Holbrook had some questions on the discussion surrounding information given to prospective parents.
Of over 500 children under state guardianship every year. And so in the recruitment of families for any of those children, there might be the need to share information about that child with the prospective adoptive parent. I believe that the concern that was raised was that we'd be sharing private data about the parent. This really has to do with about sharing data about the child to the extent that is necessary so the parent is prepared for what that child's special needs are. I think we shared the example of a child who may have fetal alcohol syndrome or some other type of risk in their background, that it would be important for the parent to know if they are willing to assume a parenting role for that child. If the agency has been doing good concurrent permanency planning all along with that child, we would hopefully be sharing that information with just one prospective family.
Representative Lesh?
Yeah, I understand that's hopeful. I would hope that it's something that the first time. Is there an average number of prospective sets of parents that are interested in adopting one of these children?
Representative Lesh, I don't know that I actually have what would be an average number of families this information would be shared with. I think that for most children, the information would be shared with one prospective family. For children who have been perhaps in the child protection system longer and may have more special needs and there's more need for child-specific recruitment, there may actually be more than one family that should be shared.
Representative Holbrook, if you have any questions.
Thank you. And my apologies, and my sheriff and police chief stopped in unexpectedly, and I don't know if there's anybody else besides them I would.
this section of the bill, a couple of years ago, we had added language about sharing data between child welfare agencies and child support agencies in anticipation of some federal law. When that actually was enacted, we struck language that we had proposed earlier to make it consistent with the federal law.
Well, I'm concerned that that we're losing. Sometimes federal law has mandatory components and then optional components, if you will. So, instances where we're having more disclosure if we lose this language that we would necessarily have?
Ms. Borsche. Madam Chair, I don't know that we're actually allowing more disclosure. I think it's just clear what the intent of the disclosure is for. In this regard, it's so the sharing of information will allow the child welfare agency to locate a parent. Prior to this, it was about establishing parentage or determining who had parental rights. I said I believe when the federal language was finalized, we recognized that it wasn't consistent with what we had proposed.
Representative Holbrook, there's a Terry Nyblom here. Nyblom, is your testimony to this issue? Please come forward and let's hear from you. Just want to state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Yes, my name is Terry Nyblom. Members. It's my understanding, based on a reading of the summary of House File 1967, this bill generally amends Section 13.46, Subdivision 2, allows agencies that administer child welfare programs to have access to child support data as provided by federal law. Current law allows access to this data for its sole purpose of establishing parentage. Anyways, I was involved a number of years when the Federal Health and Human Services amended the federal code regarding expanding the sharing of private child support data. In the interest of the committee's time, I'll go directly to my point. My issue for the last 10 years is specific to the fact that the Department of Human Services is collecting private data, including Social Security numbers from third-party sources, circumventing the spirit of the Tennyson Warning. And House File 1967 is expanding the sharing of private data. Doesn't stop the widespread Privacy Act due process violations. Apparently, because Minnesota law doesn't state the collection of Social Security numbers from third-party sources is not allowed, state agencies feel they can't continue their practice. Suggest otherwise. Law does not authorize the collection from third-party sources. It's not allowed. During my time providing the Federal Health and Human Services feedback regarding regulation, as referenced above, it was the Health and Human Services who stated to me that the privacy notice and due process is a state issue, and my concerns were not a federal issue. So the reason I'm here today is simply said I'm requesting this committee to table House File 1967 until such time as the Minnesota Child Support Agency develops and implements the use of the Tennyson Warning, consistent with our Fourth Amendment of the United States Constitution, or state constitution, federal and state privacy acts. For clarification purposes, I'm not suggesting that family courts need to provide a Tennyson Warning prior to collecting or putting Social Security numbers into court files. Federal and state law appear to be clear that it must be included in the family court files. However, when the 4D Child Support Agency accepts an application for child support enforcement services, this is the time both parties are clearly entitled to notice and due process. Currently, only the applicant for the services is afforded the Tennyson Warning. Again, my point is simply, this bill expands the sharing of private information, and perhaps tens of thousands. general terms, the child support agencies are providing the applicant, or the requester a lot of times already has the non-applicant's information, let's just call it non-custodial father, private information, social security number, so they are providing agencies claiming they're not requesting it from the owner of the social security number, but in fact they are. It's on the application and it's being filled out. It's required information to fill out the application. So in a sense, they are requesting information, but they're not giving it from the social security number.
So in other words, if I might, if somebody goes in to apply for child support, there's a form, and if they give theirs, and then if they have it, which many times they do, given a past relationship, etc., they then put the other party's social security number on the application without the permission of that person, and then by virtue of the fact that the agency has that data set, then they are able to do certain things with it without the other individual's consent and sometimes knowledge.
Exactly. And that's 23 county, state, and federal agencies that are sharing that private data, that are allowed to share that private data.
Thank you for your testimony. Go ahead.
If I could just make reference to the second page.
Mr. Nigel.
Yesterday, the Minnesota Department of Human Services issued a bulletin, which was dated March 1st of 2012. The bulletin number is 12-75-01. When I compared this bulletin to the summary of Hull's file 1967, I read the same language between that bulletin summary. It's 1967. So my concern is it possible the Department of Human Services implemented a policy change in only agencies when, in fact, this committee or the law legislatures haven't approved the bill? That's my concern.
Does the department have a response to that testimony? Would state your name for the record, please.
Madam Chair, yes. I'm Anna Lindstrom with the Child Safety Permanency Division, and Ms. Borsheim's description is this matching federal requirements is absolutely accurate. It doesn't really have anything to do with the testifiers' issues around social security numbers. It is really a mandate from the federal government that when child support homes where a dad or relatives are, we share that information with child welfare. The reason for that is also federal mandates, which say find dads, involve them in child protection cases, and consider their relatives for child protection placements. That's the reason for the change. The language here does match the regulation that was promulgated effectively in December of 2010. So we're trying to catch up with the federal regulation. Questions, members?
Representative Holbert.
If I might, do you have a cheat sheet on as provided by federal law?
Go ahead. Madam Chair, Representative Holbert. No, not when you ask, although I'm sure you do because you asked for a cheat sheet. We pored over the regulations and determined that the intent was really to get access to what was in child support data as it would be useful to child welfare for most purposes. Getting to know who the dad is, and possibly if there's data in there about relatives that would be useful, that would be helpful. So that's what we reduced it to.
If I might, I'm more familiar with the driver's license standards at a federal level, and they allow for permissive uses but not mandated uses. Is that the case in this federal law?
My recollection of the federal law is that it is permissive, which ties into the capacity of the 4D agency to actually provide the data. So in other words, if their computers are overwhelmed by their own work and child welfare needs this data, they're not mandated to figure out how to expand their computer capacity. That's just one example.
full committee has this bill.
Yeah, I understand. There's always time to continue work on this stuff. So.
There's two amendments, Madam Chair.
Okay, let's help you out with that.
Maybe the 87.
Continue to still change.
essentially what it does is rename the Act 2 of the Give Life a Chance Safe Place for Newborns. It also replaces the safe place language that has to do with sheriff's departments or enforcement agencies with ambulances dispatched in response to a 911 call. Those are primarily the changes in here.
Any questions on the A10 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion for the amendment is adopted.
That's all we have, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you. Members, any additional questions on the Zero Lives Amendment amended? All right. I don't know who made the original motion, so do I have to, even though she's not here? Okay. I renew Representative Scott's motion that House File 1967 has amended. We recommend it to pass and refer to the full committee of civil law. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion carries. All right. Representative Abler, your second bill is House File 2456. So I'll refer that in front of the committee.
Madam Chair, there's a somebody wants to going to move the bill to go back.
I think it has to go through.
Oh, through civil law. Sorry, yeah. Civil law. Man.
I know we're all tired. This only Tuesday, so. All right, and you have an A4.
It's
then?
A4 and there's a moral amendment.
To the A4 amendment.
Oh, yeah, just the.
Okay, just a second. 326 and 327 delete, right?
And then also on the bill.
Okay, let's get the amendment in shape. Do you want to move the amendment?
That's the amendment.
Okay, so I'll move an oral amendment to the A4, which is delete lines 3.26 and 3.27. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Then let's move the A4 amendment as amended to House File 2456. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. A4 amendment is adopted as amended. Now you have an oral amendment to the base bill. Page 29, line 3. Okay. Welcome to the committee. If you'd like to state your name for the record, please.
Chair Stacey Meyer with the Continuing Care Administration of the Department of Human Services. Deleting this line is, we're still working on some of this language with our stakeholders, and deleting this line just gives us more time to work those concerns out.
All right, great. Any questions from committee members? I should ask, does anybody want to testify to this? I forgot before. My apologies. All right, all those in favor of deleting page 29, line 3, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Okay, you have the bill in the shape you'd like to discuss it.
Madam Chair, I'd like to give you a 30-second overview of this. This is a very controversial bill at this point that's going to go back to my committee and work out the matters of rate setting, which are far beyond the scope of this committee. In fact, there's two different provisions in the bill. In one bill, Article 1 and Article 2, did not agree with each other, which is the discussions that are going on currently, which is why the bill can move out of my committee or out of the Reform Committee. But there's some other parts that are tied to not the rate setting component that are here, and I'll turn it over to my witness.
All right. If you could identify those sections of the bill that we should concentrate on, we can get you out of here faster.
Chair. House File 2456 is a proposal to create uniform standards for providers of waiver and non-waiver funded home and community-based services. This proposal creates 245D home and community-based services standards, which over the next 2 years will be a single set of standards across home and community-based services to reduce or eliminate duplicative regulation. The provisions that are relevant to this committee are in Article 1, Sections 2 and 3, which can be found on pages 4 and 5, and Section 24, which begins on page 29. Article 1, Sections 2 and 3 of the bill modify Section 245A and is basically replicating language from Minnesota rules on record retention.
this language to this section of statute creates consistent record standards for DHS licensed programs, whether or not they receive any medical assistance funding.
And just to be clear, these reflect current rules with no changes.
Yes. Article 1, Section 24 creates 245D.08 on record requirements for certain providers of home and community-based services. This section specifies what records must be kept by a service provider, including records of current services provided and the individuals served, the content required for those service recipient records, which individuals have access to those specific records, and as well provisions on personnel records, including what must be kept, records on employees, volunteers, and subcontractors. The content and access provisions are similar to record requirements in existing statute under Section 245B, and I can list those subdivisions if that's of interest to the committee. If any other sections in 245D require the license holder to maintain a document, those are all listed in this section.
If I might, and I might spend a lot of time here, but on page 30, where you list access to service recipient records, how do you get the proper authorization by the person? In other words, on line 29, the person's legal representative, and anyone properly authorized. What process do you go through? Who makes the decision? The creepy aunt that the person doesn't, that the service recipient doesn't like, wants to know what's going on, and the mom, the creepy aunt's sister, says, okay, because I'm the legal representative, but the patient said, I don't like that creepy aunt, I don't want to know anything about him. How does that all sort out?
Madam Chair, it requires consent of the person or the legal representative if the person wants to change or is authorized.
But if I might just, the patient always have veto power, in other words?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Any other questions? Seeing none.
Madam Chair, some of these clients are not that capable, just to help you understand.
No, I understand it. It just seems that a lot of times you can have dysfunctional families with different motives, and who is the one that's controlling the information, if I might,
Just like a creepy aunt amendment would be a great one for the floor.
All right. Any other questions? Anybody else in the audience like to testify on House Bill 2456? Seeing none, I'll remove my motion, even though it sounds like the bill is in conflict with itself. I'll renew my motion that House File 2456 is amended. We recommend to pass and refer to the full committee on civil law. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Are there any other items to come before the committee? Representative Ebler, thank you. I know you're very busy.
I think you can be rest assured that the civil law components of this bill are total agreement with themselves. So, the health committee needs to figure out its problems.